Okay, and here we are. Pod Nuts Pro. You know what's interesting? This is show 100. We probably should have done something big for it.
It's a show. That's big.
just because we're here, it's big.
You know, when I hit certain markers, when I turn certain ages, I don't do anything for those either.
Yeah, the wife is actually going to be upset with me because I will not be here for this year's birthday festivities for my birthday. I'll be in Chicago.
Is it a major birthday? Is it a milestone?
Not for me, but I'm assuming for most people it is.
Does it end in a zero?
It ends in a zero, yes.
See, last time I ended in a zero, I didn't do anything. We actually were on vacation, and I went on vacation purposely to not be home when the birthday hit. So that it reflects why we're not doing anything big on the show for episode 100.
It's just the kind of guys we are.
Yep.
Not big fanfare. What is it? Flamboyant, ostentatious kind of guys, right?
Maybe later. Maybe, you know, if we get to 500 or, you know,
yeah,
128.
Let's not get crazy.
128.
All right. So, everybody, here we are. Marvin and Matt here on Pod Nuts Pro. We are still missing our good friend Martin Obando. Martin, we love you. We miss you. And M&M is not in full effect. But here we are. So, Matt, anything you want to just start out with and say how things have been going?
Well, we had a week off, right? My fault. Too much Mardi Gras. Well,
I wasn't going to mention it, but...
Well, I don't know what the show really is scheduled is, but too much Mardi Gras. I haven't been to New Orleans for Mardi Gras in quite a number of years, but I was there this year. So I was just really too tired after... 5 days straight of Mardi Grawing, I was wiped. But since then, I had a lot of servers going out. Domain controllers, file servers, application servers, all kind of servers. Probably in the last 2 weeks, 6, 7, you know. I was working on a terminal server today is going out. A lot of servers. It's been a server month so far.
Well, I had a server weekend. I was not happy. It was that installation that I told you that I was doing where it was a terminal server or RDS 2012 and I was transferring 26 profiles. And 3 times the server went down. I shouldn't say went down. Let's just say it didn't reboot properly.
Huh.
And I ended up having to drive to the client location to see it stuck on, you know, Windows is restarting as part of the update process. It was just stuck there. And the reason it was such a big deal for me is the client's an hour away. So after the second time, I said, I'm not driving back. So I just called them up and scrapped the project. They're still on the old server. And I actually ordered a Watt box.
Yes, I was just going to say, you should get a Watt box for them.
I have it. It got delivered today. I just unpacked it, hooked it up to the internet to test it, and I will be delivering that tomorrow, and it will be ready for this weekend where I will once again start the process of transferring 26 profiles.
Now, for those who haven't heard of Watt box, what is a Watt box?
Well, basically a Watt box is, I don't want to say it's a big old power strip, but it exists for the sole purpose of, it's a box that you can plug your servers, your network devices, pretty much anything you want into, so that if you have a situation like I had where something's not responding, whether it's a switch or a router or a server, you can connect to the internet, connect to this Watt box device because it is online enabled, select the device that's attached to the electrical outlet port, and power cycle the device. And save yourself a truck roll or a trip, especially if it's an hour or more.
Now also, people might say, well, if the internet's down, how are you going to log in and reset the router if the internet's down?
Well, funny you should ask, Matt.
Thank you.
Because Wattbox also has a feature where it will basically watch for unresponsive devices and can actually be set to automatically restart devices should one become unresponsive.
Right. So your router, your whatever check is configured, your router can't get online, your router's not responding, it'll just reboot it. It won't ask you, it'll just reboot it.
Yep. And not that we were making this sound like a commercial, but boy, didn't that sound pretty good? I can tell you this though. I've talked about this with other techs, and you know, I don't know how many have actually done it, but I can tell you this: every location, the cost is so cheap that I basically am going to include this in every rollout I do going forward. So every location is going to have one of these, because I mean I'm sorry, the cost, literally the one that I'm getting now is less than $200. And that is basically less than a trip charge for this particular client. And I had to make two this weekend.
So who's going to pay for that? You're just going to build a client for it?
I'm actually going to, for this particular client, I'll probably just build them outright for it. They'll be fine with it. But for most clients, what I will do is either if I'm installing a new server, I'll just roll that into the server upgrade price. Because what I do is I always will... You know, not only do they, you know, get the server, but they're getting a new, most of the time they're getting a new UPS and a new switch. Because if it's been 5 years since we put in a server, I'm replacing all of that other stuff as well. So this will just be on that list of stuff that they're going to get.
Right. So you roll it into the cost. It's just a bundle thing. And
yeah,
if they question it, you just can say, well, no, this is mandatory. This is part of the setup that I'm recommending and that you need.
Yeah. And for other customers, what I'll probably do is I'm just going to install it, and if they balk at the price, I'll just add a little something to the monthly bill they get.
Or put a sticker on it, property of MB Systems, and when something's not responsive, you reboot it and you just charge them for it, and you'll make up the cost.
That's true.
Anyway.
Yep. Couple of reboots and you're set.
Yep.
So.
Or just go out there. Just drive out there. Reboot it.
And pretend.
Through the internet, in the parking lot. Go in and say, hi, is it working now? Oh, great. And you know, you can make up the cost for that. And then if they become not a client, you've got your sticker property, you just take it back.
Yep. All right. So, well, we both have had a nice couple of eventful days here. So before we get too far into the show, I do want to do a couple of announcements. Now, for those of you that are closely paying attention and heard us on the last show where I made the unofficial announcement about the unconvention in Washington, D.C., that is now official. I'm sorry, official.
Is that two words? Okay.
It is on. It is official. The website is posted. And we will obviously put this in the show note, but it is unconvention.io. So, roll back the tape and hear me again, unconvention.io, and it is September 16th and 17th. So I basically messed up and said it was the 15th and 16th. I'm flying in on the 15th, but the conference itself is the 16th and 17th. It's that Saturday and Sunday in Washington, D.C., and all of the details are going to be on that website, unconvention.io.
I have a question.
I have an answer.
Who designed the site for unconvention.io? I'm just curious. I just went to it. I'm curious.
Well, I don't have that answer.
I thought you knew all things unconvention.
Well, here's what I'm going to say. Matt Rodella, your friendly neighborhood computer guy, Mr. Tech Nibble in a Box website. What's the
Tech
website?
Site Builder.
Tech Site Builder. Is he and Corey Fruitman are the two co-council members on the committee. And I believe that they worked on this together. Matt probably put it all together with some nice little design tips from Corey. The multicolored octopi that's on there.
I do like the octopus. What relevance, just curious, does the octopus have with the unconvention? Is it like a mascot?
I was afraid to ask last year, and it's back, so I don't
know. Oh, so it was there last year?
Yes.
Interesting. Now I want to know what the octopus is for.
I guess I'll have to ask Corey to tell us.
I'm on the site. I'm going to do, as a contact, I can submit a question online.
Well, there you go. Since I did such a great job of answering that question, yeah.
I asked because I like the site. If this is a tech site builder site, it's nice. It's laid out nice. It's clean. It's a nice site. So if that's tech site builder, I like it. And if it's not, I still like it. So,
well, it's Matt Rodella, so he's like the WordPress guru. So, but it looks to me like it's a WordPress site. He does WordPress. He does tech site builder. So I'm gonna say they are all the Trinity.
I got you. I like at the top where it's got home, schedule, lodging, past events, contact. I think that should say past event, right?
Well, this is in anticipation that we're going to do this every year, so it's just going to become, rather than change the site next year, it's already done.
I got you. Well, so I'm hoping to go to this. I'm still up in the air as far as my schedule, but I really would like to go to this.
Well,
anyway,
we'd love to have you. So, all right. Oh, well, and just to continue on, remember we also have, in the month of March, we've got two events. The first will be March 15th through the 18th, a show that I will be attending in Chicago, the ABA Tech Show. And March 26th through 28th, the show that Matt will be at.
That's MSP World 2017 in New Orleans, Louisiana. So, or if you want to sound local, say New Orleans.
New Orleans. So if you're going to, you know, be in the area or go to those events, just pop us a quick note, let us know, and we can do a... I've already got a couple of events scheduled up in Chicago. I'm not going to talk about them now, but those that will be in the area know. We'll be doing a little mini meetup in Chicago. And those of you going to MSP World, let Matt know. And you guys can all hang out and do some post Mardi Gras activities.
Yes, sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. All right. We also had some email while you were gone.
Wow, we're really changing things up. We're putting email in the front.
I'm sorry. I just don't want to leave out the people that are participating. And it was more than just Brad this week, so I want to make a special note of that. But of course, Brad did email, so let's not lose all sense of perspective here.
We could just change this instead of saying we'll talk about our email and now a word from Brad.
You should just have Brad come on the show and ask us this question live on the air. But let's start with, I'm going to read part one of an email, and we're going to save part two for later. But we do have a part one from Mr. Tom Wilmot, who basically just wanted to say, thank you guys. You do a great job. And the info is fantastic. And for those of you that don't get that, refer to the year 2016 Man in the Van. But seriously, always good info. I really like when you guys talk about the Max Focus / GFI / SolarWinds MSP script with 9.8 Pro. It'd be nice if you guys could keep this as a segment. Maybe talking from time to time on features of Max Focus you like or don't like. I just did a tech walk on the risk intelligence scans you can run with Max Focus. It would be nice to hear your thoughts on this. And oddly enough, we will be talking about that later in the show.
Yes. And as a side note, different than what we'll talk about later, we had the billing for this solar wind stuff can be tricky. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. Well, I didn't. My office manager noticed.
Yeah, you might add one thing, but then that includes something else. So you're getting charged for both, even though it's listed differently in pricing. We were going through an audit of what we're paying and what we're charging clients, and we're finding a lot of stuff that we're being billed that we didn't know we were being billed because it's a separate line item in pricing, and we don't have that. We have this, and it's just... If you're using it, you might want to go through and make sure that you know what you're getting billed.
Yeah, she noticed it because we're we went over the $1,000 mark a while ago, and for us, that's pretty big. I mean, for you, that's probably, you know, lunch.
I'm sorry. Wow.
But ours, we went up like $200 one month, and we added, I think, 30 endpoints or something. So it was a big jump. So she's been paying attention.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta be careful when you add it, because if it's got a bunch of, if you use a certain template that's got a bunch of checks on it, make sure that you create a template that has no checks, or is, you know, just be careful, because you can, yes, those check charges can really add up.
Yeah, that is true.
So,
all right. I do have a shout out to a gentleman who doesn't want his email read on the air, but all I'm going to respond to him is War Eagle.
And that's for one listener only.
That's right.
Now, the second part of Tom's email, we're going to read probably next week, because that'll be more in depth.
Yes.
That's a topic that might take a while. So, Tom, next week we're going to read part two.
All right. And Brad's email, where's his first one? I think I lost his first one. Here we go. Brad was responding to, he talked about an update. He goes, I did this a few years ago, and times have changed, but it might work with a recent update in Google Voice. And he gave a link to a page, obitalk.com. And he says, if you have this device, you should be able to use VoIP with Google Voice with a regular phone in your home for free. And obitalk is basically a little VoIP gateway device that you can attach, I guess, pretty much a regular phone to if you want, and use. It's got its own service. It works with Google Voice. I looked at it. I like it. I just don't know if it works for me. So, Brad, we'll look at this.
So, one, it looks like one port adapter for home is under $50.
Right.
So it's kind of neat. I think I might get one. I have a Google Voice number that I play with. I might get this just to test it out. Because it does seem kind of neat. I have Vonage. That's about $20 a month. I guess I could port my number to Google Voice and use this instead.
Yeah.
That way I won't miss all my solicitation calls. Right now I'm paying $20 a month to get my solicitation calls that go straight to voicemail. Because I don't let my home phone ring. I can get those for free if I did this.
And I was looking at the two port, because I actually have two lines through another VoIP provider that I'm paying almost $50 a month for. So I'd get myself two Google Voice numbers and roll over or whatever. Save me a boatload of money.
A boatload?
Well, huh. I was going to say 15% or more, but...
So the two port's only $68.
Right. I mean, that's nothing.
That is not a boatload.
So obitalk.com, OBITALK. If anybody else is using it and you want to piggyback on Bragg's comments about it and tell us how you use it and if you like it, we'd like to hear, although Matt will probably buy his before the next show.
Yeah, probably. It's just a matter of when they have time to hook up and play with it.
Yeah, kind of like the Fluke.
Oh. Hey, we did use the Fluke. One of my guys, it's not sitting in my office anymore. One of the guys took it because we had it to a client, I think it was a car dealership, and they had some Wi-Fi things going on, and he took it over there to use the Wi-Fi stuff. He said it worked great. So.
Really? Because, yeah. I mean... That's it? No, hey, I did this with it, or...
No, that's all I got from him, and I said, good. It's not, and I don't know where it is now, because it's not in my office, so it's probably sitting on his desk.
Well, I can tell you, I mean, I use mine almost every day. I won't say every day, but almost every day, and I can tell you that one of the things that I really liked that I did use last week was the Wi-Fi analyzer in it, and... Obviously, you know, we could talk about stuff like this all the time, but it's so nice to just roll out.
If I use mine.
Yeah, well, one day.
But see, now that it's not in my office, I don't walk by it every day and think, I need to test this. Now I got to go find it.
But the good thing about what I just use it for is I've got a client where we had put some Wi-Fi access points in, and when they described the area of coverage that they needed, originally it was just supposed to be in the main, you know, office areas, a couple of the lab rooms, and in the administration offices. Well, come to find out, they wanted doctors to be able to use their tablets in their own office, which is at the very edge of the space. So the good thing is I can just simply, you know, for the most part, yeah, you can walk in with your tablet or iPhone or notebook and see if you can get a signal. But with the Fluke, not only can I walk in and tell if I got signal, but I can really, you know, actually do good testing and print a report based on that. And that's exactly, you know, what I did. And it's just a handheld device. I walk in, I've already got, you know, their credentials in, you know, the Fluke. So I just go in, hit test, and let it run through all my tests. And the actual Wi-Fi test that I do is I actually have it do some pretty extensive, you know, ping testing, and, you know, not just, you know, google.com ping, but I've got a couple of other IP addresses that they use. I've got a VPN router that I can test the, you know, connection and a whole bunch of stuff. So, and it prints out a nice little report, and we, you know how we love reports.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So.
Yeah. One day I'm going to start playing mine.
Someday.
I did hook up my open mesh device. That's how I mentioned that last time, right? My open mesh access
one?
Point. Yeah.
No,
I like
didn't
that.
Mention that.
Oh, I didn't mention that? See, no. I forget. When you take a week off, I forget what happens. So I got my open mesh access point.
Which one did you get, first of all?
I got the OM5P-AC.
Oh, the little one. Okay.
The little one. About the size of a deck of cards. Maybe a little bit thicker. So I got that, and I installed that, playing with that. I really like it. I like the cloud interface. I think it's a good access point. See, here it is. See it?
Okay. Yeah, I got like three of them over there.
So I do like it. For an access point, it's pretty good. So I like it. You know, the captive portal. At the office, we were playing with a Ubiquiti one.
Yeah.
But you have to have a controller.
Correct.
So this pretty much does the same thing. Although there were some features on the open mesh that you could not get on the Ubiquiti. They said it was coming soon. But you have to have a controller. This is all cloud-based. So I like it. I like the map that you can drop in. I like that you can upload a floor plan and put it different places. It's got a lot of cool features. I really think that when somebody wants an access point, this is what I'm going to suggest.
You had not used the open mesh at all before.
Correct.
Oh, I'm telling you, if for customers that don't require heavy usage, and what I mean by heavy usage, I'm talking about tons and tons of uploading, downloading. Like my medical client, you know, has to upload x-rays, and they take tons of pictures and upload those into their cloud app. And the open mesh wasn't good for that, but for my law offices, these things have actually been fantastic.
Okay, so why wasn't it good for the other ones, even the higher-end models?
Yeah, I had gotten the MR1750 models, not the new AC models, so I can't vouch for those. They may have done the trip. But what happened, it seems that there was a saturation point where they would have probably 50 devices. They were just hammering. I mean, we're talking traffic of, you know, a few gigs a day that they were trying to push through there. For regular browsing, they were fine. For email, they were fine. But it was just the constant uploading of the pictures and stuff. So I ended up moving them up to Ruckus, and those problems went away.
Okay.
But for my It's not that they can't handle large amounts of volume, because for my law firms, I mean, I've had law firms where they've, you know, somebody's come in and downloaded, you know, 2 gigs in a day using, you know, even the OM5 devices. So it's, I think it's not necessarily the volume in terms of the traffic. I think it's just the number of devices plus the traffic, the saturation. And it may have just been that particular client. They were in a very dense area. There was, I mean, they were surrounded by 50 other Wi-Fi access points in that building. It was a lot. So I don't know if they were competing for airspace and the ruckus just basically came in and dominated. But
so that was the MR1-1750. That was a round one, the smoke detector one.
Yes.
All right. So the new ones are like little squares.
Well, they still have the round ones. They're just a different they're just a different model. The OM5s, they're basically what I would consider my low use, you know, if you've got a small conference room or a small office and they just need occasional Wi-Fi, those are the ones to use. For most of my heavier use law firms, I went with the MR1750. And they've been fine. And my one firm they've got 8 locations, and you mentioned the ease of use with setting them up, you know, in basically a web portal, and instead of having to attach them to a controller and configure them and do all that. I mean, you just sit in your office, configure them. You basically, once you get the network configured, you just simply add the next device. It self-configures.
Yeah, you could pretty much drop ship this to a client.
Yeah, that's what I did.
And have them give you the number. You just key it into the portal.
Or you do it before. I do it beforehand and then ship it to them and say, here, all you got to do is plug this into the wall and plug a cable into it.
Right. But if you don't even want to see it, you could just drop ship it to them directly.
True. You could. Yes.
Now for somebody who wants to try these out, do you think the OM5P would be good for somebody at their house or residential access point?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, you know, as long as your house isn't, you know, 5,000 square feet.
Oh, so not my house? No. It's just those $1,000 lunches, you know, my house is pretty big, you know.
Yeah, I actually started out with 2 of those in my house, and I had one actually in my little home office, and then I put one on the other side, you know, kind of by the garage so that, you know, I'll my entire house would have coverage, and I could have coverage outside when I'm by the pool. So that's what I did. I just did 2 little ones.
So yeah, you can do scheduling of Wi-Fi. You can do vouchers.
Yep.
You can do a lot of neat stuff, and you can do this with other devices too. But I like that you don't have to have a controller. So anyway, that's my little open mesh thing. I think about killing my other Wi-Fi and using this one and just making the kids earn vouchers for Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah. Do your chore, get a voucher.
Yeah. Your friends come over and need a voucher. And you could integrate, what is it, PayPal? Or right into the portal, you could have your account where they can just pay you for a voucher too, right? Because you can pay for access.
It's PayPal, yes.
It's PayPal. Yep. So right on the voucher, you connect to the access point. You can direct them to a page when they open their browser, and right there they can pay for their access. Yeah, it's got some cool features. Yeah. I do like it.
Yeah, I use this on my nephew when he comes to visit. We put little controls on him with the scheduling. He gets frustrated because, you know, lights out are at 11:30, so you know he'll be in there on his phone, and you know the first couple of years he would come over and, you know, I'm asleep, and, you know, he's up at 2 a.m., you know, doing whatever. So the last summer, we put these in and had the schedule, and like at 11:35, he's like knocking on the door, Uncle Marvin, there's something wrong with the internet.
Nope, it's working like, as expected.
I'm like, no, there isn't, Bubba.
One thing I like about these things that I'll mention is if the internet goes down, the open mesh, you can set it to not even show that there's an SSID available.
Right.
So that prevents people from connecting to Wi-Fi and then can't browse. They just can't connect to the Wi-Fi.
Yep.
Which would eliminate a lot of calls. Because most users don't understand, well, I'm connected to Wi-Fi. I should be able to get online.
Yep.
So and I now, like that feature as well.
Yeah, because now you can be like, do you see the Wi-Fi? Well, no, but yeah, you're down.
Yeah, so that's nice. I like that. I like that feature a lot.
All right. Whew. I've lost track of where we are.
So that was the email, one of the emails, the whole roundabout thing from the...
So today, there was no open mesh mentioned in an email.
No, that was a branch off of something. I forgot. I think we're on Brad's
Google,
emails.
Google Voice?
Yeah, see, it's all related. Google Voice, internet,
to Vonage,
access
to
point.
VoIP. Yes, there we go.
But is there another email from Brad? Yeah. Were we reading that one?
Well, his was actually a multi-thread, yeah.
Okay, yeah. You know what? He needs a Watt box if you read it. The IT crowd would have loved to have a Watt box on everything.
Yes. Yep.
So he says, a previous email, I mentioned that I use login scripts. Yes, that's for smaller environments without a server. In a domain server environment, group policy is the only way to go. Without group policy, we match the user logon for the Windows username and password and map drives. Let me read that again. I lost track. Without group policy, we match the user logon for the Windows username and password and map drives. Okay, so he saves that in the script is what he's saying, right?
Right.
Yep. I model my policy off the IT Crowd TV series. Have you turned it off and on again? And login scripts fix a lot on a reboot. Kind of joking, but only kind of. No. Look, I reboot. When somebody calls me, I do the same thing. Have you rebooted? And the IT Crowd would love Watt boxes. He would just reboot everything.
Yeah, because you don't even have to ask. You just say, look, I'm going to reboot you.
Right. When you call this number, it reboots your computer.
Automatically. Can you imagine?
And that's one thing good about the dashboard is people say, I rebooted. And I look at the dashboard, I say, are you sure? Because this last reboot was 17 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I thought I did. Well, how do you think you rebooted? You either reboot or you didn't.
And again, from the dashboard, don't worry, I'll take care of it for you.
Right.
I tell you what, that dashboard, since we're on a Matt's Focus, and we are taking a left turn, Clyde.
Should we say SolarWinds? Do we have to say SolarWinds now? Or is that the new name?
I'm not saying squat yet. Well, yeah, they're invoicing me as SolarWinds, so yeah,
there you go.
SolarWinds. But it's still Matt's Focus, right?
What does the dashboard say? Let's look at the dashboard when you log in.
My dashboard, you know, there's some goofy little icon up there now. Mine's branded, so mine says MB Systems Network Support. What does yours say?
Mine's branded for my company. You mean to the left of that?
Yeah, that little whatever that thingy is. I don't remember seeing that before.
I clicked on it, and...
It's authenticating.
There's probably some kind of email warning. Don't click on the little box to the left of your logo.
Yeah, it does nothing. Just refresh.
It didn't do anything. It just said it re-authenticated me.
Okay, well.
Well, that's a useful button.
That's nice. It's an extra dollar a month just for that.
Yeah, because I clicked on it. Well, from this IP, you clicked on this little button. That's going to be a $3.95 charge.
About clickbait. But yeah, you mentioned the dashboard is nice because you can see not even just, I mean, last boot time, last response, and yeah, people lie.
So do we want to mention a few things? I can mention a few things about the new SolarWinds panel.
Well, I will tell you this. Since we last talked, I went through and did all of the changeovers for my take control from TeamViewer to the MSP Anywhere. I've got all but six moved over. And I've been using the MSP Anywhere. And not as happy as I was before.
I could say something that I like more, something that I like less.
Okay, I can accept that.
The one thing I like more is the reconnect.
Well, yes. No more commercial use warning.
Right. You can actually reconnect. Because with TeamViewer, you reconnect and he says you got like, what, five minutes?
5 minutes, yes.
And sometimes it's not. I've looked at it. It's not 5 minutes. I got kicked off more than 30 seconds.
I think it's 5 minutes from the time it restarts. So
okay, so if
your computer takes a long time to reboot, you've lost precious time.
Okay, so it's not when. Okay.
Yeah, because I've connected, and then like in a minute, I'm booted. I'm like, wait a minute. So I think that's including the restart time.
So I never liked that. With the thing I like with the MSP Anywhere, it actually does reconnect without any issues. I like that. That's pretty much the thing I like more. It's pretty much the only thing I like more.
It only takes one, right?
Well, okay, here's what I don't like. I don't like two major things I don't like. I don't like the way they do the monitors. I can't see all the monitors at once, right? With TeamViewer, you can do view, show me all monitors.
And you can split them. So if you have dual monitors, you can put one on one side, one on the other. I mean, I love that.
You can't do that with this, with MSP Anywhere. You can click the little monitors tab and it cycles between monitors, but I can't see them all at once.
Oh, I don't like that.
Most of my clients have two, sometimes three monitors. So I don't like that. The second thing I really don't like about it is that it is always the active window. So I have three monitors on my work computer. If I click something and it wants to open on the same monitor that I have MSP Anywhere connection on, it goes behind it. The MSP remote connection window will not allow anything to pop up in front of it.
What?
So I've got to move it to see if something pops up behind the MSP Anywhere remote connection window.
Well, that SolarWinds, are you listening? That's not good.
Now here's another thing. Sometimes if I have to move my connection from one window to another, it goes black.
You know, I have noticed that when I'm moving stuff over, because it freaked me one time. I thought I lost connection and
So it blacks out sometimes, not every time. Sometimes. And sometimes you can click on the in the middle of the screen and it comes back. Sometimes you have to disconnect and reconnect to get it back. Yeah. So that's three things I don't like.
I don't think I like the file transfer. I think it's slower.
That is a little different.
And cumbersome.
I mean, I don't like the chat either.
I haven't used the chat. How does
So the chat works. You have to go, I think, to interactions.
I don't like that you have to hunt and peck all over the place for the commands on, you know, one corner to this corner to.
So to chat, you have to go to general and then chat with Nancy, and then you can type your message. Now, once you start a chat, you can pop it out to a different window, but to start it, you've got to get off the remote desktop screen, go to general, and then go to chat.
Right, like with file transfer, you have to go off the remote screen too.
But you used to not have to do that with TeamViewer. Now, if you go to general, you can see some connect. You know, you see the MAC address, you can see disk space, CPU. You can see some things on there, but I don't like the layout, and I'm sure I'll get used to it.
You know, I got excited when I saw it because it looks a little nicer to some degree. It looks a little more professional. The file transfer screen does look nice. But,
but you gotta make sure you click here and then click there. It's not as easy as dragging and dropping.
No, files. Then you have to right click and either select upload selected or download, and then it lists all the files. And I mean, it gives you the nice little progress bar, but it just makes me notice that the progress is slower than it was before.
But if you don't switch over to MSP Anywhere, you're gonna start paying more in a few months,
right?
And so, I have quite a few people on in the dashboard. It would have cost more than lunch to keep them all on TeamViewer.
Oh, yeah. Trust me, it took a whole day to switch people. Because like you said, when you go in and make the switch, you got to switch the policy to know that you switched, and then going through each ones to make sure that they were either inheriting the parent settings. Because, you know, sometimes I've got individual workstations that aren't inheriting. So that was fun.
Yeah. So I did all that over a couple of days. I did all the servers first, and then it worked reasonably well. When I say it worked, I can connect to it. Right. So then I just did the workstations in a few days. But I'm in remote sessions all day long. And the first thing I noticed was the monitors. and that it's the, not just that. It's it, I don't know if you have more than one monitor, but if you open something, it always opens behind it. Nothing will open on top of the remote connection window. It's a bully.
You know what? I probably didn't notice that. I only have two monitors, and I usually keep my dashboard on one, and that's where I do all my remote sessions. So, I mean, I've got stuff on top of each other anyway, but if I was moving them around, I guess I would notice more. But I don't really do more than two or three sessions at a time. So,
well, even if like, I have three monitors, so I have remote connection on one, I've got ConnectWise open on another, and I might have my email on a third. But if I want to go look, research something, I'll open a browser. If the browser opens on the window that I have the remote session, it's going to open behind it. So I got to move it, the remote connection, and then put the browser on the other screen and move the remote session back. And then risk the chance of it blacking out on me when I move it.
All right, well, that sounds like it'll be frustrating.
It does frustrate me. Because I keep my remote session on the middle, my middle monitor most times. That's the one that's right in front of me. And I usually keep my browser on the middle one because it's right in front of me. I don't mind looking to the side for the email and looking to the side for work order for ConnectWise. But the middle one is just where it always pops up. And that's why I notice it, because it's always popping up and behind it. So, that's my thought on MSP Anywhere.
Okay. Well, other than that, I love Max Focus Solar Winds. Remember that.
I love Logic now, Max Focus Solar Winds.
I mean, here's the thing. I mean, I almost made a switch about a year ago and just couldn't do it. The other program just wasn't baked enough to do all the stuff I need. And I know the grass is always greener, and yes, but I've had to turn a couple of people away that have called. Because, you know, everybody's always trying to sell. And I'm at a point now where I'm in a little sweet spot. Almost everything works. And the stuff that does work, I don't want to mess it up. So I'm not looking to change right now. I'll probably, you know, I want to get through this year and have a full year of things just plugging along, working. I know exactly what to expect. The only thing I just got to figure out now is this Ninite scripting thing I got it. Well, I shouldn't even say I got it partially working, because I didn't do it through Max Focus. So, I actually got the batch file working on my servers or admin stations as a scheduled task and a batch file. And I know there's probably a better way to do this, but I'm not a good PowerShell guy yet, so that's one thing. And two, I did go in and load all my files and scripts into the script manager. Have you used that in Max Focus?
I have not. I have a guy that does that.
All right. Well, I've loaded a bunch of scripts in there and tried to get them to set up as tasks, and that's where I'm stuck. So, I would say that I will ask for help, but I'm afraid that I'll get a whole bunch of people, you know, calling me a Yahoo and how do you not know how to do that, sending me, you know, 3 and 4 page long PowerShell scripts. I have to be able to understand it before I do it, but I definitely do want to learn that. So if anybody has some nice little tutorials they can point me to, or some. You know, some sites where I can figure stuff out and get that going, I would appreciate that.
Did you read the help file?
I couldn't find it. Well, I went to the Ninite site.
Yeah, ConnectWise.
In the Ninite
University.
The Ninite. I don't have ConnectWise.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not ConnectWise.
SolarWinds.
Yeah, I thought they had like a whole training segment.
They do, but nothing very specific to this. And what they do is they end up redirecting you to other sites where they say, hey, this site has some good scripts.
Oh, yeah, right. It's a community.
Yeah, so
they're crowdsourcing it.
Yeah, I don't just want the script. I want to know how to build the script and set the task. And because, you know, the difference is, and I think it's because I want the reports to be emailed to me after Nine-Night runs. And so, for instance, right now I've got the batch script set up. It runs as a scheduled task. And as soon as that scheduled task is finished, it actually will email me the exported report in CSV format. And then from that format, I can actually extract out how many updates were actually installed. So I can tell a customer, look, the update ran this week and you had 123 updates on your 15 computers. That's what I want to be able to do. Most people, I don't think, do that. I think they just run the updates and just say, you know, ran updates or whatever. I want to be able to report to them that not only did I run the updates, but I installed this many updates. So I want the report emailed to me after the script is run. So I'm trying to automate all of that. And I would love to do it inside of Matt's Focus. So SolarWinds, if you're listening.
So yeah, I don't use it much at all, but I'm assuming you're going to the script manager and creating your scripts in there. And
So,
yeah, that can get pretty complicated.
It is.
That's an advanced feature.
Yes. Apparently I'm not that advanced.
Not yet. You'll get there, Yahoo.
But I will address Tom's remark earlier about the risk intelligence reports. Have you used those?
Risk intelligent reports. No, I have not.
Risk intelligence, that you can go in and set up where it will do a check on your customer's network and give you kind of a risk assessment. So if you've got, you know, compliance stuff that you need to worry about, you can set up this scan and you can just do it as a one-time scan. Or I've actually got it set up on my one customer where it's every month. But it can be just simply a general scan, a security scan. It'll actually do a PCI scan or a data breach risk scan. And so if you've got a customer who wants to know how secure they are, you can actually go into your Matt's Focus and run this scan and tell them you need to spend $5,000 to upgrade your security, and here's why.
Interesting. Okay. So I have not done that. We don't have any. I'm looking at my right now. We don't even have any scans set up for that.
Yeah, I've got the one, and the reports are, I mean, they're hefty. They're not, it's not going to be a little one-page report. These are pretty intense reports. So it's going to take more than a show to explain it.
Okay, so move along from that then. I haven't even looked at it before, so. So, are we done with emails? I don't know, let me check.
I think we are.
All right. So now I'm moving to the post-email segment. That was a stack of emails.
Yes. Thank you, everyone. Right. Send more.
Yes, I agree. So, I got two things. One story and one, I guess, tip. So, I got a call from a client. And, of course, it said the internet was down. So, when they're telling me this, I go to the dashboard, and I can see that all the servers are checking in, the workstations are checking in, I can connect to the servers, I can browse the internet all the time when they're telling me what they think is wrong. And I tell them, it looks up to me, I'm connected, I'm browsing. I said, what are you seeing? Well, we none of us can connect to anything, and our girl who's remote, she can't connect in. And I say, okay, I'm not seeing anything. Have you called your ISP? Just to make sure there's no outage. Maybe it's up right now, but it's dropping. So call your ISP. I'll look around on the servers. I'll look in the router. You call your ISP and we'll, you know, let me know when you talk to them. So I'm looking around. I don't see anything wrong. Nothing. I can browse. I can connect to every server. They call back. And they said, oh, the ISP said there is an outage in the area, and it'll be fixed in the next 5 hours. Okay. So I'll stop looking. I mean, I don't see anything wrong. I said, can you try again on your computer? They said, yeah, we still can't get on. I said, okay. And they said the girl remotely still can't.
Did you do a take control and go onto their computer? And
I did, because I knew they could. But then they said that they confirmed the ISP has an outage. And they said, and the Gorimoli can't connect either. I said, all right. I can log in the terminal server, and I can see other users from other offices connecting. So I know it's not everybody. I said, well, look, if there's an outage, let me know when they report the outage is resolved. So they called the next day saying, okay, the outage is resolved, but the girl remotely still can't connect, and we can't get online. I said, okay, let me take a look. So then I did take control of her computer. I said, show me what you're doing, because I opened up Internet Explorer, homepage came up, I went to different sites, it all came up. I said, what are you doing? Oh, I'm going to this site, and it's not working. Oh, it's working now. I said, wait, you were meaning the internet was down because you couldn't get to one site? She goes, well, that's the only site we ever go to. So I said, everyone in the company was trying to go to this one site, and that's why you think the internet was down? They said, well, yeah, this is the only site we go to. I said, okay. So did you call them to see if they had problems yesterday? Well, no, because the internet said, the ISP said it was, okay, whatever. The site's up now, but in the future reference, you want to check other sites to see if it's just that one site or if it's all sites. If it's all sites, your internet might be down. And then she goes, well, the girl remotely can't connect, so the internet must be down. I said, okay, well, we've just seen that the internet is up. I said, the girl remotely, she's been connecting remotely for a few months. But a few months ago, what did we do? We enabled a VPN, right? I said, well, I'll call her. But when I called her 2 weeks ago, she forgot to connect to the VPN first. So my guess is she forgot to connect to the VPN first again. And she says, well, why would she forget to connect to the VPN if she does it every day? I said, well, I don't know. I can relay the question to her if you would like. So I called her. And she goes, yeah, they told me the internet's down. It must still be down because I can't connect. I said, okay, so how far do you get? Does a VPN connection connect? And she goes, oh, I forgot I was supposed to do that. I said, that's okay. Go ahead and connect. Did it connect? Oh, it connected. Now, let's not forget, I named her RDB connection on her desktop. You know what I named it? I named it Connect to VPN First.
Well, I don't think that's obvious enough.
So she's clicking on an icon for remote desktop that says Connect to VPN First. She was forgetting to connect to the VPN. So the whole company was down for a day because they insisted the internet was down, even though I told them it was up. And their proof was they can't get to one site, which they didn't tell me. They said they couldn't get anywhere. And this girl couldn't connect remotely. So the whole company was down for a day. So I called the girl back and I said, yes, she was forgetting to connect to the VPN. She can connect now. And she said, again, well, how can she forget that? I said, you may want to ask her. She felt bad about it, that she's making everybody check everything. You may want to call her and ask her. And so I left it alone. I didn't want to say what I really wanted to say, because that's not nice.
You're an ID 10T.
Really, how do you forget to connect when you connect every day? The shortcut says connect to VPN first, and you just... And then I've even showed her. When I set this up, I showed her, if you connect to this without connecting to VPN first, you're going to get this screen. And she sent me a screenshot saying, I'm getting this screen. Yes, that's what happens when you don't connect to the VPN first. We went over this. So I just thought it was funny. A company down a whole day. They didn't even try. They didn't even try to connect the whole day. They didn't even try because they were waiting for the all clear from the ISP to do anything.
Right. Ah, joy, joy, joy.
And I had forgot about them, really. By the afternoon, I forgot. Because I had told them, you're up. I don't see anything down. I said, so I would just keep trying. And when you get the all clear, if you're still not able to get on, let me know. And that's what they did the next day. The next day.
I can't believe you let them just get away with that. Because I would have been like, okay, is your email working?
Yeah, because they emailed me. They were emailing me. Right. And I told them.
If you can email, your internet's working fine.
I told them, yeah.
You know, I mean, I guess you were just letting him go, but I would have forced them. I said, no, go to Google. Can you go to
Amazon. Well, no, I think I said you can, so you can't get on any website. And they said no, but their any website to them meant this website.
Well, I guess if that's the only site you go to, then that's any right. website.
And it was funny because I said, well, let's try and power cycle the, I mean, I'm in the router remotely. I said, but let's try and power cycle the Switch. Maybe the Switch, but they can access the servers. So I'm thinking it's not the Switch either because the server access is fine internally. But I said, let's just power cycle the router and see what happens. He said, well, I did that already. I said, you did it. Okay. So in the watch guard, I can see what the uptime is. And the uptime is like 6-7 weeks. I said, I'm not sure what you power cycled, but it wasn't the router. The router's the red box. Oh, I power cycled this. What's that? I don't know what that is. That's nothing that we put in. I said, that might be your modem. So he says, well, what's the switch? So he found the switch, but he couldn't find the power cord for the switch. I said, it's in the back, you know. It's like a toaster, you know.
I can't see the back.
So he couldn't. Then he said he power cycled it. He said, okay, it's off. I said, no, it's not off. I'm still connected to the server. Obviously, if I pulled the switch, I would lose connection to the server. I said, whatever you unplug is not the switch. So plug that back in. He never could get it. Mm. I power cycled the router just to make him happy. But in the end, I don't know what they were seeing. So I let him go because really it's only hurting themselves. I told them over and over again, you're up, you're up, you're up, right. You're up. But they didn't want to believe me. They're believing their own eyes.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're not here, so obviously, you know, you don't know what you're talking about.
And let's not forget, they don't want to pay me to go on site.
Absolutely.
So they'd rather just be down a day. But hey, they saved that charge.
But what is that site? I mean, is that a billing site for them?
It's a billing. Yeah, it's their billing site. It's where they go online and do all their billing.
So they lost more money by not having you go out.
And they didn't even call them to see if they had an outage. I said, look, you might want to call them just to see if they had an outage, to know what the problem was. Nice to know what the problem was. Although your ISP reports an outage in the area, they didn't say you were down specifically. I said, I would still call them and see if they were down. But
yeah, I just tell them, I say, look, if somebody says you're out in the area, that's the same as the weatherman saying, you're going to see some rain, but yet it rains, you know, a mile away, and that's right. In your area. But it didn't rain.
And I was connected the whole time. Hmm. And I actually left my MSP Anywhere remote connection open the whole day. Now, of course, it reconnects, so maybe it did drop. I wasn't watching it.
That's true, yeah. So this wasn't the day that Amazon broke the internet, was it?
No.
That was a fun day.
That was pretty good. I liked it. That affected a lot of things.
That was, I tell you what I got a lot of questions on because of that is, if we go to the cloud and Amazon breaks, will we break? And I said, I depends on whether your cloud is part of Amazon.
Yeah.
And from what we found out that day is a lot of people didn't know that they were running on Amazon S3 servers. Because really, do you really know where your cloud is?
No. That's an issue.
Yep. But the best part about it is all of that happened because of a typo.
Do you know what the typo was? I've heard that, but I don't know what the typo was. I didn't look into it.
It was, let's see, basically an employee on its S3 team was working on an issue with the billing system and meant to take a small number of servers offline, but they incorrectly entered the command and removed a much larger set of servers. So probably they meant to take down 10 servers and took down 100 or 1,000.
So is it a completely wrong command, or did he mistype the correct command?
Well, that they're not going to come out and say.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about. To me, a typo would be I put an extra E or an extra zero.
Yeah.
As opposed to running the wrong command. If there was a command to take down one node, but you typed the command to take down the whole farm, that's a little different, right?
Right, absolutely. So, I mean, I'm sure they're not going to say, somebody will find out eventually. So, we are watching that story for any updates, along with CubeSec Information Technologies.
What is that?
CubeSec Information Technologies, the gentleman that got arrested for extortion.
That's right.
His court date is March 10th.
Nice. My guess is this will be dismissed right away. I'm hoping.
Should be.
So you have that, you're keeping on that, because I'm very interested in knowing the outcome.
Yeah,
of that.
Basically, nothing's been updated since February 17th, except for there's actually some verbiage from CubeSec himself where he says, "I am innocent of all allegations in this manner." And he said, "This should never have escalated above a civil matter between KIT and the coming Forsyth County Chamber of Commerce as a matter of a business contract."
Yep. I agree. If it wouldn't have been a government entity, it would not have escalated.
Yeah. So basically, they canceled the contract without and refused to pay him the remaining balance. So, and it actually says, after a while, he simply switched off the Office 365 cloud service.
Well, yeah, they canceled it.
As he would for any other customer that was delinquent on its bills.
And they canceled it. Said, I'm not going to pay it. So why should you continue to provide service that's it's costing you something when they don't want it?
Right. So the Chamber of Commerce person that said that they had, you know, extensive backup above and beyond
procedure
was probably oh, we got everything back because it wasn't deleted within the 30 days.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not going to say we didn't really have anything backed up.
And... Right. above and beyond.
Right. That's such a... I would love to know what that above and beyond is.
Hmm.
So, I have a question for you. Do you deal a lot with service records for DNS?
A little, not a lot.
How about autocomplete records for Exchange?
I actually have not configured Exchange in...
Are you looking at your clock?
My calendar.
Oh, okay.
My last installation was 2012.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so for those people who actually do have Exchange servers in-house, we still have quite a few Exchange servers in-house. Quite a few. And you know Exchange Outlook 2016 requires... you can't do manual config. Well, actually, you can, but it wants auto-discover records. Not auto-complete, auto-discover records.
Auto-discover, yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you know this, but let's say you have a standard Exchange server, and you have an SSL on it, because every Exchange server should have an SSL certificate on it, right? Let's say you do not have a wildcard cert. So, you just have mail.abc.com, right, as your SSL cert. If you create an A record, and actually it should be a C name, for autodiscover.domain.com,
yeah.
domain.com and point it to mail.domain.com, if that's your MX record, or if that's your record for your server, you're going to get a certificate error, right? It's going to pop up and say it's a server name mismatch. From your certificate says mail.abc.com and your autodiscover.abc.com does not match. Have you seen that before?
I actually have seen that, yes.
So that's a problem. And I think my fix for that was there's been two fixes. One is to get a wildcard cert. So it doesn't matter what it is, right? Wildcard certs are more expensive.
Right, but that's actually one of the easier fixes. So I have done that.
It's actually not an easier fix. An easier fix is create a service record instead of a CNAME record. And I found that, I wish I had saved the article. I found the article where Microsoft recommended that the way to create auto-discover records is a service record and not a CNAME. If you have an auto-discover record as a service record, you'll get a pop-up saying the first time you open up Outlook, it's saying something about this is redirecting you to this site you want to allow. You can click on yes and don't ask me again. As opposed to a certificate name mismatch, it's going to pop up every 10 seconds.
Right.
But the service record allows you to click it once and remember it. So I tested this with a client who was getting that, And they have a call. I said, if, of course, this was 2 days ago. I said, if you still get a pop-up, I need to know about it. You'll get this pop-up. Click the checkbox. Click allow, which is the checkbox is don't remind me again. Click allow. That does not work. I need to know. And they haven't called in 2 days. And from what I've read, that should fix it. So my tip is service records for AutoDiscover, not a CNAME. Here's the thing. Not all DNS providers allow service records.
Right. Which is probably why I did the wildcard cert.
So we have, we're a reseller, and our account allows service records in one portal, but in our deprecated portal, there's no service records. So now I've been migrating everyone to the new portal, which is quite a few domains. And I've got to do it one at a time because there's no migration tool. I've got to go create the records and then change the name servers. So when I have spare time, I've been tediously changing everyone to a new portal in our DNS panel to be able to add service records when we need to. So
how many exchange servers you still got?
Oh, man. So I don't even...
I'm down to 5.
I really couldn't even count.
All right, so I mean, more than 100.
I don't know if it's more than 100. It might be close to that. We've been trying to get people off of it. But this goes back a ways. I still have people on Exchange 03.
Oh, no, we got rid of that. All of mine are 2010 now.
Yeah, we still have a few. I've got 03. I've got everything from Exchange 03, Exchange 07, Exchange 2010, and we've got a whole.
Yeah, take that back. I do have 1.7 because we still have an SBS 08 that is still in operation, and they don't want to move because obviously there is no small business server anymore.
And it's working well. See, my small business server is server 2012 or 2016 in Office 365.
Yeah. I will probably do my first 2016 this summer. So that's what I'll do with that. And that is the client where we're on. They're on 2010. I forget who their hosted is. I think they're hosted at Network Solutions. And we ended up doing... We did the certificate, but we did it for a bunch of reasons. It wasn't just that. I think they got it because they wanted their website seal something to show up.
Yeah. So this, if there's other reasons, it's great if you need a wild card. But if the only reason you're doing a wild card is for the service, for the auto discover, I would say just do the service record. I just have to go change hundreds of domain names to the new DNS portal. You think, I thought changing over to MSP Anywhere was a little tedious. Click here, click here, click here. Changing over DNS is going to be a lot.
Oh, look. Network Solutions has service records, so I could have done that.
They may have changed it too since last time you needed it. Yeah. They may have got a new portal. So any current DNS provider is going to allow service records. I mean, ours allows it, but we just never move people over to it because it's just a nightmare.
Yeah, that's always the tedious stuff.
So a tip, if you need to choose a DNS provider, make sure they do service records because you're going to need to put service records in. All this stuff, Office 365, all the services in there, a lot of them want the sync,
the active sync?
Not the active sync. The other service is Office 365, and I'm drawing a blank right now. Name. What's the messaging? There's a messaging app, and there's anyway. I can't. But there's other services in Office 365, and they want service
the
records.
The link service.
Yeah, link service wants a service record, and some of the other services want service records. They can't be. It can't be C names or A records. So
yeah. Office 365, man, they are they want to get into everything.
They do. They want that recurring revenue.
I mean, nothing wrong with that, but I mean, it's going to be, think about it. Office 365 is, you know, what used to be just your mail is simply now your mail, your complete Office suite, your Skype for Business, your OneDrive, your Yammer.
SharePoint
that none of my clients like. Azure, Active Directory.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, people are going to say, what do we need you for? Microsoft will do all this for us.
Yeah, good luck. they'll be a provider, but they're not going to configure it.
Right.
No. I like it. I like the hosted Exchange. I'm not a fan of the new Exchange servers. So I like Office 365. Eventually, everyone will be on it because we're not putting any more Exchange servers out.
Right.
Everyone, well, I say that. We have a couple of big clients that are not going to want to go to Exchange. Hosted Exchange. You know, because they have 300 mailboxes. They don't want to go. They don't want to pay the monthly fee for 300 mailboxes.
Right. Yeah, my client that we're going to put in the 2016, two reasons. One, they have 195 mailboxes, but they are not going to switch to a hosted case management system. So they're still going to stay with an on-premise management system that'll require an on-site SQL server to integrate with their on-site Exchange server.
That's going to be fun.
That will be. And that is going to be, and again, this may not sound like a big project to you, but for us, it is going to be huge because this is going to be five locations, seven server migration in one weekend.
No, that's a big job. I can't say I have that done before lunch. That is a big job. But I like those kind of jobs, especially when they're done.
Yes.
And the invoice goes out.
So, and it's awesome. I mean, it might be, now think about it, for the man in the van, that's going to be basically between server hardware and software, that could be $100,000 alone in servers for that weekend.
That's nice. Nice.
So,
and when are you doing this? Is that this year?
It's going to be this year. We haven't quite mapped out a time yet. I've got a meeting next week for the preliminary prep work to find out, you know, how much stuff we have to do. We've got to talk about, because they've got to convert a database. We're going to get all the specs that we need for the servers. So I've already done a preliminary spec, and the smallest server without cows or anything like that is somewhere between $12,000 to $15,000 for, and that's what they're going to use for their DFS servers to replicate data. 10 terabyte RAID 1 hard drives.
Let's say, so when you order these servers, are they going to you're going to make them prepay for all the hardware, or are you going to front the money for that?
They are going to pay for the hardware up front. They may not pay for all of the licensing up front. I may do, because what I probably would do with this customer is a 30-30-30-10 type deal. But I got to see how much it is first. I can't front that much money.
Yeah, that's a big job like that. And of course, do they normally pay their bills on time?
Yeah, they're pretty good.
So that's good, but still, that's a lot of...
They're not the fastest, but they're not slow. I mean, pretty much I can have a check within a week if I had to.
Yeah.
But yeah, what we'll do, because the problem is it'll take so long to prep that I will probably make them do a deposit for the hardware, because it'll probably take me a couple of weeks to set up the servers, because I mentioned we're doing DFS replication. So we're going to actually have to set these servers up to replicate from the old servers before we actually deploy them. So we'll probably make them pay for the hardware up front. We'll do part of that. We'll do the licensing for the Windows cows and the SQL stuff and all of that stuff before deployment. So I'll probably make them pay for all of that the week that we actually start, and then there'll be a balance, you know, once it's all done. So
nice. You get a lot of points on your credit card.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of brownie points with my distributors too. They'll think I'm moving up to the next tier.
Yeah, see, here's this week's order. Next week, we might have something similar. Oh, well, let me bump you up here.
That's right.
Let me get you a dedicated person and a...
So, you ordering 7 servers again this week?
They can say, well, I'm trying it on a new distributor. I had some issues on my last big order with you last week, unless you can help me out on the price. Maybe you'll get the next big job.
I tell you what, for using distributors is a nice, nice deal. So for guys that are still buying from, I mean, not to say that buying from Amazon or Newegg or whatever, I mean, we still do, but it is nice to be able to call up a distributor and say, look, I've got a pretty big order here. You know, what can you do for me? And they'll do it.
Yeah, and a lot of them have things that they don't tell you about. So I know, is it HP or Dell? One of them, if you buy more than 4 or 5 computers in one order, they give you like a, I figure with a discount. And you get a discount if you buy 4 or 5 at a time.
HP does that.
HP, yeah, I know. And I think Dell does something similar, which they're not going to tell you unless you ask. Because why would they give you a discount just to give you a discount? But if you call them and say, here, what can you do? They'll say, well, we got this discount available to us. So... every little bit helps. More money on your margin.
Well, what's funny is there's some of them where if you are above an X amount of dollars, you have to register the deal. I mean, it's kind of, I know Ruckus is that way.
I didn't know that. You got to register with them? With Ruckus?
Well, yeah, through the distributor, you have to actually register it so that it gets approved by Ruckus.
Okay.
And I'm sure it's to, you know, keep track and make sure it's all authentic and legit and all that stuff.
Very good. So, what else you got? Anything else? What are we at here? We're almost an hour and a half.
We are supersized. You know, we missed a week, so.
Okay. Yeah. Plus it's 100.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We're almost at 100 minutes,
too. We can go 100 minutes. That's it. So I'm going to let you, just so that we hit 100, I'm going to let you.
that wasn't a challenge, I can tell you.
No. No, I think we're good. We already know we're going to answer part 2 of an email next week. So I think that, trying to look here at my note.
I didn't talk about my security cameras I got in my house, but I can say that for later too.
Oh, did you get those installed? Is this the guy that didn't show up the one day?
Is that the guy that didn't show up?
He called again.
Yeah. That was, yeah. They showed up in the second appointment. But I tried some other ones. Did I tell you I tried Arlo? I tried Arlo cameras from, I think Netgear owns them.
Right.
I got all those in and stuff, but we can mention it later. I'm curious. I mean, I know cameras are a big thing now. People are asking for cameras, so I tested a couple, but in the end went with this other one, so which I can't resell to them because it's through my alarm company. So, All right, next time. I still have it on my list of things that I didn't talk about yet. So to end off.
All right.
I told you,
yes.
Marvin, I got an email from a client. And it's a standard email. Nothing special. I don't even know what the email was about. But in their signature, they had a quote from Benjamin Franklin.
What?
And I said, I've got to save this. I've got to let Marvin know that someone else out there likes Benjamin Franklin quotes as much as he does, because they included it in their signature. Must be important to them, right? I was shocked. Not shocked. I mean, Benjamin Franklin, of course, has many good quotes. So I'm going to share the quote this week to end off show 100. And the quote is, "Be at war with your vices, at peace with your neighbors, and let every new year find you a better man." And that will wrap up show 100.
Oh, I'm getting a little misty over here. wow. Ladies and gentlemen, whew, what a way to end show 100. And with that, we're going to say thank you for listening, downloading, and subscribing to the show. And for all comments and questions and stories, please be sure to email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com. And when you're done listening to the show, be sure to check the show notes for all of our upcoming events that Matt and I are going to be at on the USA World Tour 2017. And on behalf of Mr. Benjamin Franklin, I'd like to say thank you. And everyone, please have a good night.
Hi, this is Matt, the host of the MRP Tech Podcast. If you're interested in anything technology related, I invite you to take a listen to the latest episodes of my show. Each week, I'll discuss any tech topic that comes to mind. I review hardware, software, games, and even discuss robotics and other things such as rocket launches. You don't have to be a tech expert to love technology. Join me each week as I share my thoughts on everyday tech for everyday people.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.